Well, good day everyone, and thanks for tuning into Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast. It is really great to be with you here with you once again, and I'm very excited to have my guest here with me, and he's right on screen at the moment. We'll introduce him in a moment, but you can get a glimpse about his name from the video in front of you right now. And this episode is all about the way technology is changing the face of teaching across the world. And it's actually not just about apps this time or even equipment, but the very nature of teaching itself. And we'll be talking about a phenomenon called asynchronous pedagogy. Now, if you haven't heard about that, then make sure you stay tuned because this is a really interesting discussion. And make sure you're watching this episode on YouTube if you can, because there's going to be a whole lot of great stuff that Hugh's actually showing us live, which is great. Now, I'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes. If you've been enjoying these podcasts, you can just head to timtopham.com/iTunes and all the instructions are there. It takes about 3 or 5 minutes and it's a great way of me getting the word out to more and more people because it does improve rankings and that sort of thing. And finally, if you're looking for the show notes for this episode, all the links, all the information that we're giving out will be at timtopham.com/episode13. And before we jump in, I'd like to thank today's sponsor, which is Airturn. If you've recently purchased an iPad and want to make full use of what this technology has to offer for teaching and performing, then you really need to check out Airturn. Not only are they the sellers of the market-leading page-turning device, the Airturn Ped, and a host of other iPad pedals, but they also sell iPad music holders and stands, remote controls, and even my favorite weird accessory, the Byte Switch page turner. So I was trying to work out why this is really cool, but if you're an organist, and I've learnt and played organ and I do it for services quite often, you can't spare a foot to turn a page with a pedal because there's enough going on down there anyway. So you can actually turn pages with a little switch in your mouth. Now, if you want to check this out and all the other great stuff that Airturn has, make sure you head to timtopham.com/Airturn, where you'll find a discount code for 10% off the whole store, but it's only for a few more days. So the offer ends on Tuesday, the 15th of September. And at this rate, their main Airturn pedal is well under $60. And when I bought mine, I think it was well over 100. So this is a great deal. Anyway, Hugh has been sitting there very quietly and pointing at things as I've been talking. my guest is Hugh Sung. And look, his bio is huge. It would take me probably 20 minutes to read out everything you've done, Hugh, so I'm going to keep it really short and sweet. He's a renowned pianist. He's an entrepreneur and a teacher, and he made his debut at age 11, if you can believe it. That wasn't a typo.
No, it's not a typo.
With the Philadelphia Orchestra. So this man has since studied with renowned teachers around the world. He's performed on just about all the continents except Antarctica that I could see. And he's becoming, is that coming up?
No, working on it.
And he's becoming, he's a noted teacher at the Curtis Institute of Music, Hugh is also one of the founders of Airturn, this show's sponsor. So we've got a great connection there with the sponsor of the show. And he has popular website and YouTube channels. And in 2014, he joined the teaching group at artistworks.com, which is an online music school whose technology and teaching method will form the basis of much of today's discussion. So, Hugh, welcome. Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Tim, thank you so much for having me on your show. Great, great podcast. I really enjoy listening and watching you.
Thank you very much. I'm really enjoying getting into everything we've got today, and I'm just excited about what's all the stuff that's going on behind you. This is really, really good. But look, just before we jump into today's topic, I actually, when I was reviewing your bio, found out about visualrecital.com. Now, last week's episode was with Christian Yost, and we were talking all about reinventing the recital, so how to make it more interesting. And one of the things she was talking about was actually getting artists into... She's done this before, had them draw and create art while music is going on.
Sure.
And I saw that website of yours and I thought, oh, do you want to just give us a quick rundown? Because that might be a great link into what some people were hearing last week.
Boy, the visual recital was an old project that was a good 15 years ago that I was kind of playing around with the idea.
Right.
So the basic idea was this. I wanted to create the Fantasia experience live. I wanted to take Disney's animation and find ways for musicians to control live animations from their performances. The first system was really silly, stupid. It was just PowerPoint slides that I would control with a primitive foot switch system.
Okay. Yep.
But it was interesting. I did a performance using that primitive system in Brazil. And then I met some Brazilian programmers that took me to their underground CIA-style headquarters and exposed me to some amazing technologies. And one of the technologies, before I abandoned the whole idea, was actually getting into graphical programming for audio and visuals. It's an open source program called Pure Data, and the visual component is called GEM. And with Pure Data, what you can do is you can control input options, output options. You can create your own audio synthesizer. But what's really interesting is that I could start to delineate pitch, I could delineate volume, all different parameters of the input. So instead of me pushing a switch to change scenes manually, I could play the piano, and as the music got louder, the image would change, perhaps change shape or color or size.
Okay.
If I hit a certain note, then you would start to see snowflakes fall down. I could do all sorts of cool effects, and quite literally I could improvise my performance and then change it on the fly to have different effects, and I would use a foot switch to change the scene.
Yep.
But then each scene would have a new set of different visual parameters. Sometimes I have a webcam on myself, you see my hands, and they'd start to change shape and color as I played. And it was really just my attempt. I'm a very visual person by nature, and one of the frustrations I know, believe it or not, as a musician, is that the language of music is very vague. And for folks who have never had musical training, it just goes over 99% of people's heads.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what I wanted to do was what Fantasia did. Take the music,
bring it into a story,
bring it to life, so that people who had no experience, and particularly for like contemporary music, really obscure, hard to understand scores, I wanted to really reveal the magic of the music in a different language, but yet using the visual medium to help people get that bridge, say, oh, I understand, that's exciting, oh, that's a place to pause, or that's something mysterious. All the emotive things that you express musically, I thought a visual medium was going to be the perfect pairing. But it's so much work. I need a whole production team just to do these shows.
Absolutely, I can imagine. And interestingly that you say this was sort of 10, 15 years ago, because now I know there are iPad apps out there that do respond to music and do these great graphical imagery things, isn't it? It's amazing how technology has changed like that.
Well,
probably not the same sophistication, but the
it's not. It's, and the, exactly the thing with a lot. There have been a lot of visualization programs. The problems, it's all the same static stuff. It's like it's basically generated fractals,
yes,
which will take your sound and just do mathematical equations to turn them into different patterns, mathematical patterns.
Yeah,
that's great. But if I want to tell a story, a visual story, one of my early successes was the story of Babar by Poulenc.
Right.
A wonderful little narrative piano piece, and telling the story, seeing the little animations of Babar and his story, children loved that, and they got the music, and the music kind of emphasized what the visuals emphasized back and forth. And so that's a great example of bringing the music to life through a visual story.
Yeah, okay. Well, so there's obviously some information there. If people are interested, they could probably check it out. Is that website still live? Yep. But perhaps not quite so relevant. not quite so relevant to today, but that's okay. I was just interested when I read it. All right, well, let's get stuck into today's topic, because video and technology really is changing the face of teaching. And I'm a big believer in that you're at the forefront of this, because you're doing things a little bit differently. So can you tell us the kind of teaching that you're mainly doing these days and how that involves technology?
Well, everything I do usually involves technology, because at the kernel of it is that the fact that technology enhances our capabilities to do things. It amplifies our abilities. It extends our reach. And in the case of asynchronous pedagogy, we can bypass the limitations of time and space. It sounds like sci-fi talk, but it's really true.
Are we on a space podcast?
I'm always in
Star Trek. All right, stay focused.
Okay, let me get back to this planet. So basically what happens is I currently teach students all over the world. But what's really neat is I teach them at my own time. I don't have to. I'm teaching some people in China and in Japan and in Australia, believe it or not. But I don't have to wait until the middle of the night to teach them. I teach them whenever I want, and then they also get their lessons. They can post their lesson requests whenever they want. So basically, asynchronous pedagogy, I'm going to kind of jump to the punch here a little bit.
Go for it.
So I create these videos that respond to my students' video questions. The students play a video and upload it to the Artist Works website. You can actually go and learn about it here at my website, here, hyusungpiano.com. Mm-hmm. They post a video to my online school, and then I create a video, very simply, answering their video with my video. So they can post anytime they want. I can post anytime or anywhere I am, but of course I have a lot of advantages with my home studio because I bring in a lot of extra technology into my teaching, into the videos that I produce for them.
Okay, so it's still teaching in the same way, except the asynchronous pedagogy, this very complex sounding term, just means that the teaching isn't happening at the same time with the two people. It's out
exactly.
of time.
So- Yeah. Exactly. So rather than a Skype lesson, which has been the traditional kind of technology that most teachers have used to teach somebody in a distance learning situation, this is basically, so the student will post a video, and it may take a day or two for me to get to them, but then, so they get a response. It's not at the same time, but they will get a response within a day or two of their posting, and there are some distinct advantages that I find with asynchronous video that you just don't get in a live video setting.
Okay, so I was going to ask you, there's obviously some advantages. There's probably disadvantages too, but let's start with the advantages.
Well, a couple of advantages. Number one, and this is going to sound transdimensional, but the fact is with asynchronous pedagogy, I have my eyesight basically increases 1,000-fold. My hearing increases 1,000-fold. What that simply means is when a student plays live, I have to depend on taking notes of what they're doing right then and there. Sometimes I'll miss it. And of course, if I'm looking at my music, I miss what I'm seeing with their hands or their posture.
Absolutely, yep.
But when I can see their video two very simple words, three words, stop, pause, rewind. With these three simple words, I can review every detail of a student's performance. So they may only upload a 3-minute video of a little section of a piece, but I can break down exactly what they're doing and better analyze what's going wrong because I can pause at any moment, see where their hands are, see if they're using the wrong fingering. I might have missed the first time, go back and review, oh, that's why they're doing this or that. And that's what I mean by my eyesight, my hearing, my analysis is amplified 1,000-fold simply because I can pause, rewind, and review endlessly until I get just the right answer. For that particular student situation. I just can't do that as effectively live. Again, you know, with practice, you can kind of take your notes really fast, but you're always going to miss something.
You can't pick up everything, that's right.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And I guess this relies on the students giving a clear video for you and audio.
See, that's another advantage of the asynchronous video system or the lesson system. With Skype, now you and I are working with high, you know, good broadband connections, so our pictures are relatively good. But for, believe it or not, for most of the world, there's a lot of the world is still on dial-up. And even my parents, you know, they are still on a DSL. Their internet connection is terrible. They could never have a Skype connection as clean as what we have here. Most students will, unless you're fortunate to have a broadband connection for a great streaming experience, the image is going to be much more pixelated. When you can create your video with, you know, your own local hard drive, then upload it, then your image quality, your sound quality is much, much better because you're not buffering and streaming through a live stream.
Oh, okay. So your students will actually record themselves separately, and then they will just upload that file. And as long as the upload completes successfully, you've got the perfect file. It's not because it's not streamed live to your connection or anything.
Exactly. Okay. And with iPhones and iPads and our digital devices, I mean, this, you know, this little device will create a very high quality video. But if it's not, it doesn't have to be compressed for a streaming experience. I can really see excellent detail, hear excellent detail. But when you stream it, you lose a lot more information live.
And for those of you listening, you were just holding up an iPhone. Was that right?
No, this is an Android.
Oh, it's an Android.
I am tech agnostic. I'll say I'm.
I got the iPhone.
You've got your iPhone, but I've got my Android phone. And one of the things that it's been interesting for me is, and we'll allude to this later, but I am comfortable with all platforms, whether it's Android, Windows, Mac, you know, iPad, and I think in my situation, because of my work with Airtron, I've had to become proficient with all of those technologies. But the good news is, for most teachers wanting to use technology, an iPad, a MacBook would be perfectly sufficient. An iPhone would be just fine, too.
Okay. So you've talked about some of the advantages. Are there any disadvantages?
You know, it's really hard to think of any real disadvantages. You know, some teachers feel like you have to be in the same room to physically touch a student, to, you know, shape their hands or their shoulders. But, you know, I initially thought that was going to be an issue, but it's been amazing, the technology, and perhaps it's simply because I understand the best way to deliver information. I found that it has been just, and sometimes even more effective than a live lesson. Again, when I can take the time to step back and really analyze what's going on in terms of posture, even with sound production. Now, the only disadvantage might be, again, it gets to a higher level. If you're getting to a kind of a professional level experience, then perhaps being in the same room at the same time, you get more of some of the nuances. But I actually find that not to be so much the case. Again, with the high quality of videos that you can upload, I pretty much capture all the information. You think about the YouTube videos you guys, everybody watches. They're very compressed in terms of their audio quality, but nobody seems to complain when they can hear their favorite composer or favorite artists playing, you know, on a YouTube video. Nobody complains about the low quality of those videos. It's the same thing. So.
Yeah. Exactly right. And I wrote down before, beginners, question mark. Now, is this a way of teaching mainly intermediate and advanced students, or could it be beginner? I'm picturing children this wouldn't quite work for, perhaps.
That's a very good point. I teach beginners of all ages. I have a brand new six-year-old who just signed up for my school. She's adorable. But most of my beginners are actually in, middle-aged and senior citizens who have never played the piano before. So, for older beginners, this is perfect. You know, professionals who have, maybe a little bit more time and they want to, pick up a new hobby, or they've always wanted to learn, never had a chance when they were younger, and now they have the means and the time to do so. This is perfect for the adult or the teen learner. For children, and again, I think for children in this instance, simply because of the need for discipline and for parental oversight, it's a lot harder for kids to motivate themselves or to direct themselves on a video course. So usually it works very well in tandem when the parent, and this is true for a live lesson anyway, but when the parent is in tandem with the educational process, then it works great. You really can't leave young children alone in a video lesson. A parent still needs to be involved to help them interpolate the information. Now, it can be done. But I think when a parent is there, they're just going to learn much more effectively and have better focus and discipline.
Yep, no, that makes sense. And if I was a new adult teacher and I had no idea about piano, it sounds like it's a little bit student directed, in that I'd try and play something or try and do something and you respond to that. Is there also, do you have basic lessons where you actually say, okay, this is lesson one, this is how you move around the piano, this is what the notes are and things like that?
So the way I designed my ArtistWorks course was very unique. And I have, my main theory is that, number one, people learn best when they're learning something they love, okay? Mm-hmm. And number two, they'll put in the time, the effort, when the lessons lead to a result that makes immediate sense. So one of the things I shied away from when I created my online curriculum was starting from esoteric exercises that didn't have an immediate application. Okay. I create the exercises from songs that people either want to play on their own. People can either go through my curriculum, or some people just say, I just want to start learning X piece. And one of the things I'm best known for is teaching people how to play Clair de Lune. And I teach people who have never played the piano before. And we just get started right off the bat. Here are the first notes. Put your hands here, put your hands there. And as they're learning, I say, oh, by the way, this is a key signature. Oh, by the way, this is a flat. Oh, by the way, here are some rhythms. And as they're getting their fingers on the keys, it's partially rote, but then with the rote, I can mix in the theory to help them understand why the music works the way it does. Right. And so by the time you've gone through all of Clair de Lune, you've built up a substantial advanced technique in the shortest amount of time possible, because it's very much you've learned everything you need to learn that piece, and you've got the immediate reward of like, oh, it sounds great. Now I understand why I'm doing that. So it's a thrilling way to teach, and it's a way that I'm surprised that more teachers don't employ. I know you're very big on teaching popular music and helping students to, you know, start off with what they want to play, and I think that's a great motivation, and it requires a lot more imagination from the teacher to take those popular songs and extract useful information, break it down for the students, so that they're not just playing their favorite things or learning by rote, but actually developing the good fundamental tools so that they can learn their own songs later on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm 100% with you, but I use pop music in exactly the same way. Here's the song, but that's not really the point of what we're doing. It's just a window, a doorway through to learning about how that song was constructed and the musical features of it, which then helps you learn other music. So yeah, I completely agree. I would imagine most teachers wouldn't teach that way. One, because it's too hard. Oh, sorry. that doesn't sound quite right. It takes time and effort and thought that a lot of teachers just simply don't have, because it's like back-to-back lessons, and you know, you want to have some time with your family and that sort of thing. Well,
here's the beautiful thing about the asynchronous pedagogy method. So, for instance, I had about 15 students I had to teach, was it yesterday? Chunked it out in 3 hours.
Right.
The students pull up their pieces. Some students, I can spend 2 or 3 minutes. I just go right to the point and say, most of this sounds great. This is what you need to work on. 3 minutes, I'm done. Yep. Another student may take 5 minutes. The longest lesson I think I've taught is 15 minutes.
Okay.
So with this method, my time is much more focused. I get right to the point of what the student needs, and I have more time to myself. So I can still do all my business pursuits, my marketing, and all my other, my performing, my recording. I have a new CD that just came out. So all of these things I have more time for, because my time is much more efficiently focused. And by the way, when a student needs extra help, I do a lot of personalized arranging. So a student wants to work on a piece, maybe it's a little too difficult for them, I'll write an arrangement for them. Mm-hmm. The good news is that now all my students online can follow. That's another thing about the ArtistWorks program. It's not just one-to-one. All the videos are treated like a masterclass. So everybody can see everybody else's lesson exchanges. So if people want to work on that particular piece, they can all watch each other and see how the other students have learned it. So they all learn as a group. And when I make a customized arrangement for one student, guess what? That's now available to the whole school. And so the extra creativity I put into a particular student, I always think about the maximum benefits for as many people as possible. And it always comes in the form of rewards of, first of all, the students become fanatically loyal. They love working with you. Mm. That fanaticism extends to their friends, and suddenly you have more students that want to work with you. And frankly, it just works so beautifully that it teaches so many people all at the same time.
Mm. I love the idea of it being really focused, I guess.
Yes.
So you can you can focus your time. They're only going to record what's really important, so you're not listening to a whole sonata or something like that and sitting there waiting for something to feedback on. They just show you what they need help on. And the fact that everyone can see it, I think, is brilliant.
And there's one more very critical aspect. It's history. The cool thing about the videos is that the videos all stay up on the site. So I had one older woman remark to me that she just went back and started watching the very first video she posted up, where she's just learning. And it's just that's a couple months ago. She's just learning to put her hands on the keys. And now she's playing Chopin. She's interpreting the Chopin Prelude in E minor.
Oh, wow.
You know, she's like, I can't believe I'm doing it. But the cool thing is she can see the history. And I can't underestimate this. When students can see their own progress, it's life-changing. Mm. It's not just sort of a vague, well, I started this, I guess I'm getting better. You can document exactly what gets better. And because students are posting videos and they know other people are watching, they become more focused in the video, in their own video production. But they also realize that they want to take what I've done and apply it. and really make it work. So they don't put the video up until they fixed it. I can say about 99.9% of the videos I get show distinct dramatic improvement from the previous video. It's the most accelerated thing that I've seen, and I can document it. That's the coolest part. You can look at somebody's history and say, hey, check your video out, you know, 10 videos ago. See how much further you've gone? And you just see the improvement in these folks who thought they could never play before. It's just so thrilling, so amazing.
It's great. It's very exciting. I really like the concept. Do they pay a monthly fee or something? How does that work?
So it's I have to warn everybody. My school is prohibitively expensive. I charge about $10,000 an hour. No, the great thing too is because this is basically crowdsourced technology. We can disperse the cost of that amongst a larger group of people. So basically, what it comes down to work with me comes out about $1 a day. And that means unlimited access to all the videos, unlimited video postings, unlimited responses. Some of these students are posting videos every other day. It's quite amazing. So we have 1 month, 3 month, and 12 month memberships. And obviously, when you get the 12 month membership, it's even cheaper than $1 a day.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing.
No, it's definitely the way things are moving online too, aren't they? To these, the kind of subscription models that give you more access to more things that more people do together and is all shared. I think it's great.
It is. And what makes me feel really good too is I really believe this is a kind of model that can change the world, because now I can say to that student who's in the middle of nowhere, who can't find a teacher, who can't afford lessons, $1 a day, just about anybody can afford that. And not only is $1 a day, but they're getting the best, well, if I might say, some of the best lessons. Really, they're getting some of the best lesson experiences they could get, and still personalized help. It's not just they get a bunch of discs and they're on their own. They watch the videos and they're getting personalized help from me and from the other teachers in the school that teach other instruments as well. So they're getting personalized help from some of the best people in the industry. That's an amazing model that should transform music education around the world.
And what about the equipment? Do you permanently have cameras and things set up? Because otherwise it's going to take you ages to do the feedback videos, isn't it? If you've got to set all this stuff up and everything. Is it all just ready to go?
Well, some of it is ready to go. I mean, believe it or not, I still have live students coming, so I have to tear the whole studio down and make room for them. So I've got, you know, the main things that are the headaches are the studio lights and the cabling and everything. But I've gotten so good that I can put it together in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
The things that I do have a permanent ceiling cam that I have screwed into my ceiling, that stays there. But everything else can be taken apart pretty easily. But yeah, I have a ceiling cam, a forward cam. I've got my MacBook, which actually streams my sheet music. And in fact, I can show you a demonstration. Well, we can talk about some of the other sheet music demonstrations. And then I have a video switcher that can switch between all three channels. So what's really cool is that I can show markings on my music on the video, and they can see my fingerings, my notes, any kind of graphic notation I want. I can demonstrate that for you if you'd like.
I would love to see it in action. Could you?
All right, absolutely.
Yeah,
so let me switch over. Let's go over to this. I know one of the questions you wanted to ask. So here's some music. I don't know if you can see that.
Yep.
But I'm using an app called Fourscore. It's one of my favorite apps. It's spelled Fourscore. It's a PDF reading app specifically designed for musicians. So one of the critical things as a teacher is I need to show the music. And let's say somebody needs help finding a fingering. I can use my pen and just draw markings. And let's say I want to show them a 1-5-5, maybe teach them the pedal. I can use different colors to show the markings there. I can use highlights to emphasize different things. And the nice thing too is that it's all non-destructive, so I can erase it. And I can also, more critically, I can save multiple versions of the song for different students. So if multiple people are playing the same song, I can save the fingerings or the notations for one student and have different versions for another student so that I never lose track of what they're doing. So it's
You're on your iPad just in front of you, right? And that's just being relayed to the screen. Yep, great.
So I've got my iPad. I've got a little video connection to this screen over here. But I do a similar technology. So what I'm doing on my video feed, because my MacBook back there, I don't know if you can see it, I have a MacBook back there. It has a video connection out of its lightning port into the video switcher. What I do is I normally have my iPad on my piano, and I'm reading it and teaching from it just like I would in a live situation.
Yeah, right? Okay.
And I'm using a program called Reflector on my MacBook. Reflector uses AirPlay, which is built into all Mac products. And from my iPad, I simply swipe up from the bottom, turn on AirPlay, and as long as my MacBook and my iPad are on the same Wi-Fi channel, I simply turn it on, my iPad appears on the Mac screen, and that in turn appears on the video stream when I switch to that channel. Mm. And so whatever I draw or do on my music appears on the MacBook, which then gets fed into the channel. Sounds convoluted, but it's actually quite simple once you get used to working with it.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to Reflector for that's for Mac, and I use X Mirage, which is the PC version that does the same thing. So we'll put links to online. Yep.
I've just learned something new. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got the score in front of you and that sort of thing, and you've shown us about the annotation. I'm a big fan of Fourscore. I use it all the time. I store all my music in it. It's so good.
Sure.
Were you going to show us something else about how you actually do the lessons or what the cameras look like or something?
Well, I can't, unless I get my MacBook and start spinning it around. I can talk about the details. It's really a lot of cabling.
I was going to say, we probably don't want to go into too much detail because I also don't want to turn teachers off when we go too much into the technology too, because it's like it can be overwhelming. And I know there are some teachers out here who'll be listening who would be just thinking about buying their first iPad. They might not even have one yet, and so to start talking too far might be going into a bit too much depth.
The great thing about the iPad, and I will say this, even though I have an Android tablet, I have two iPads. The iPad is the most mature when it comes to music applications. They simply work the best. So I highly recommend any teacher brand new to using technology to teach, start with an iPad. You'll have a lot of tools right under your fingertips, and they're very easy to use. Mm. So Fourscore is a great app for reading PDF files. And by the way, a great resource, I didn't put a slide up here, but another really great resource is a book, an old-fashioned book called From Paper to Pixels, Your Guide to the Digital Sheet Music Revolution. It's a book I actually wrote when I was working at AirTurn, and it was written exactly for musicians who know nothing about computers. You know, if you don't know how to turn the computer on, if you don't know what a tablet is, what's the difference between a tablet and a computer, much less how do I put music into my iPad? What can I do with it? This book is written for you.
And I did a review of it some time ago, and so I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And I've just got it in front of me at the moment, and I remember there was, even for me, and I'm reasonably technologically savvy, there was some interesting things there about screen aspect ratios, about building set lists, expanding with controllers, and things that I actually hadn't come across either. So you're absolutely right. It takes you from complete newbie beginner and right through to some more advanced things. So it actually caters for most people. And it's like $10 or less with the discount. So
exactly. And you can either get it as a paperback for those of you who are not ready to read things on a Kindle or a tablet, or you can get it as a Kindle or an iPad download, so iBooks download too.
Mm, great. So we'll pop the link to that. Actually, it's in the AirTurn store, so it'll be linked up anyway via timtoppen.com/AirTurn. All right. Now, the big question, of course, is, let's say I'm listening to this podcast, which I am, and I'm keen to find out more about this and potentially maybe down the track look at doing some of this myself and getting into it. How do you go about doing that?
You know, the ArtistWorks school itself is a closed school. I mean, it's invitation only, hand-selected faculty for now. You know, at some point in the future, it may be a system that becomes open to anybody that wants to use that platform. I think most likely what's going to happen is you'll start seeing the ArtistWorks video exchange learning system first appearing in schools, in higher education, and then eventually it may be open more to the public. So it's not a helpful answer. But just to get started right away, the best advice that I can have for teachers is start your own YouTube channel. Follow Tim's example and start teaching online. Well, what do I do? Make your own videos about the things about your style of teaching that you find most effective. I recently started my own weekly channel called Pro Piano Tips. And every week I just teach a basic or an advanced piano tip, you know, whether it's how to play super fast scales or how to, you know, conquer this little run over here, how to strengthen your fingers, you know, little tips, but it's been a great exercise for me to not only hone my video production skills, which is a great thing for any teacher to get involved with, but also to build an audience. And now I've got a worldwide audience, and they're sending me questions about, well, how do you do this? How do you do that? And in reality, my YouTube channel, because it's becoming so popular, is now becoming my sales channel to get more students, personally, directly, and also through my online school. So it's a powerful tool, and that would be the first step that I would recommend to any teacher. Get a camera, get some lights, get a microphone, start teaching. Get started. You won't know what you need until you start. Mm. And once you do, my first videos for my Pro Piano Tips, I just did off the fly. My first video, I think, was like 25 minutes, and everybody blanks out after three. That's something I learned. I learned, you know, stop making 25-minute videos. Learn to focus your lesson to a 5-minute video. Mm. Little tips like that, you will learn as you make them. And then you'll learn how to edit your videos. You'll learn how to upload them. And students will start asking you questions, and then you can simply make another video on YouTube to respond to those questions.
Mm, yeah, I cringe when I look back at some of the things that I used to do in my early lessons. It's online videos, but that's part of the learning process.
It is, and I think we as pianists, as musicians, we're trained to be perfectionistic. We don't want to let anybody see or hear anything until it's absolutely perfect. It's stage fright, right? Mm, mm. And I think one of the things with technology is, you know, think beta. It's always under improvement. There's always room to improve. And don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to, you know, have your, I've had bedhead days when I made my videos, you know. That's okay. As long as you're willing to laugh at yourself, not take yourself too seriously. But if you have something really special to share with the world, people want to see you as you really are. Believe it or not, much more so than they want to see a perfect version of you. So,
And I think it's also for teachers listening, it's about getting comfortable in front of the camera, because that can be a really awkward situation of its own accord. And for teachers who don't feel perhaps right at the start they've got anything particular to share, although everyone does, but they could also just start with that concept of the flipped classroom, which is very popular in Australia, where instead of always teaching, you know, let's say you're always teaching a particular piece by Bergmuller to your students, start recording a few videos about the introduction, how you introduce the ingredients of that piece before they start playing it, or a little video about the hardest part of that and how you do it, because you'll know those things that always come up in your lessons, and the students that always come back and say, I can't do this, or have trouble with it, just make a video about it and send them to that. And that's a great way to start too, I think, with YouTube.
Absolutely. And this is a great example of where your live students will really become the feeder for your imagination. As you say, you may have students, and this is where I get so many of my ideas for producing the next videos in my series. People say, or I'll see a student struggling with this or that, and suddenly, oh, wait, here's a solution. I never thought of thinking of that as a video to make, but the student presents a brand new problem or a brand new piece. That's material for a new video for you to produce and upload.
Mm, absolutely. Lots of great ideas. I'm loving this conversation. It's so good. And I think, too, it's easy, even for me. I've got a reasonable following online and on YouTube, and I look at you and go, oh, my God, you know, it would be so hard to start. Now you've done this for so many years, and there's thousands of videos out there. But we've just got to kind of say, you know what, it's my own thing. I've just got to start somewhere, and it's everyone is individual too. So people, not everyone might like the way you teach or the things that you teach,
exactly.
But they may well like someone
exactly.
else. So, you know,
Absolutely.
There's no harm in getting your ideas out there.
But you know what? There's also a very useful exercise. I mean, it's very important and to study what other teachers are doing. Mm. And it can be painful. I was just talking with a student at Curtis who wants to start his own company. I asked him, well, what kind of company do you want to start? I don't know. I just want to start a company. You know, I think as musicians, you know, how many different people are playing Chopin and how many ways can you play that Chopin piece? You know, there's only so many ways, right? We may think it's an infinite field, but really Do we need another, you know, another interpretation of Chopin? So sometimes it's actually helpful to refer to somebody who's taught that piece. And don't be shy about saying, hey, check out this person there. Check out that teacher there. You're going to get ideas. And through that really honestly surveying what's out there, you will discover what's most important to you. Maybe there's a particular kind of music that nobody's playing that you can introduce. Mm. Maybe there's a style that sings to your heart. Or maybe you write music and you just need a venue. Maybe you write arrangements of things for your students that they love. Why not share those arrangements with the rest of the world and make them available? That's the start of a great lesson and start of a good potential business too.
Mm, absolutely. Great ideas. And I guess the other thing for teachers who have studios, and particularly if they're trying to build their studio, one of the first things I always say when I get asked this question is, have you got a website? So you definitely need a website. But if you want to get rankings and you want people to find you and search and things, then YouTube, having YouTube videos is a huge benefit. Because Google owns YouTube, they're kind of interlinked, and YouTube is basically one of the second or third biggest search engines. So get your stuff out there and you will be found, and students and parents can find you playing and see you teaching already. They kind of know about you before they've even gone to your website.
There's also one more critical component that I think most folks who are diving into the new digital realm don't realize. Some people do all those things. They set up a website, they post a couple of videos, and then they hear crickets. Nobody comes, nobody watches. Well, what do I do now? The most important things to realize, the whole point of the internet is the socialization aspect. It's you going out and making friends. It's you being trustworthy as a teacher, as a human being. You know, if people like you as a person, they will come, but it's also you making an effort to reach out and being helpful for another blogger or for another YouTube channel and going out and complimenting somebody. Hey, I love the way you taught that, or I love the way you played that. Or here's some suggestions for you. Maybe you might want to suggest, try this or that. Have you heard this piece? When you contribute, there's a great rule in business, in marketing specifically. Rather than ask, ask, ask and try to take, 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 give, give, give. Mm. And after 8 times of giving, maybe one time you ask for something. The more you give, the more generous you are as a human being, the more people will follow. They'll want to follow you because they see somebody wonderful, somebody generous. And the one time you might ask for something, guess what? They're your friends. They would be more than happy to oblige, or you know, to listen at least to what you're offering. Mm. So my first rule for not just doing the technical things of setting up a website, a YouTube channel, social media, be a great human being. Be generous. Be kind. Contribute. Share. Compliment. That's a big one. Compliment other people. And then when it comes time, be patient. And then when it comes time for you to ask for something, trust me, it will come because the goodwill is there already. Build a relationship with the folks you're trying to reach out to in a genuine way. That's probably the best thing for people getting forward with technology.
Oh, you've just given me a warm and fuzzy feeling inside, Hugh. I almost want to finish on that because it's such a great point. I've got a few more questions, but what were you going to say?
Well, just that fact, you know, sometimes it's easy to get enamored and boggled down with the technology so complicated, got to learn this, 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 and that. But in the end, you can think of Craigslist. It's the ugliest website, but it functions because it brings together basic human needs, people who need things and who want to share them. Some of the best websites are not pretty. They're very simple, but because they address such core human needs, you don't have to have the prettiest website. You don't have to have the most advanced technology. If you are a wonderful human being and you give and you share, trust me, people will find you, they'll come, and you then use your technology to leverage that, but it never replaces who you are as a human being at the core.
Mm, absolutely. And sharing is the now, isn't it, when it comes to pretty much every industry, I think, but particularly teaching. I remember when I started blogging and presenting at conferences, I would get teachers coming up to me afterwards and sort of saying, you know, you shouldn't be giving all these great ideas away. And like, why are you sharing all this stuff? Because, you know, teaching has such a closed door mentality, classroom as well as instrumental. It's like, no, this is my idea. I've kept all these notes from however many years and they're all mine, sort of thing.
Yeah, my secret fingerings. Don't share those secret fingerings with anybody else.
That's right. And I'm so glad that that is changing, and it has changed significantly in the last 10 years now. And I certainly don't get asked that question anymore. And so many more people are starting to get this idea that really we all benefit when we all share things. And that's exactly the core of what you just mentioned before.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. I mean, you think of it, as much as music education has advanced, the vast majority of the world is still musically illiterate. So we've got still a very big job to do when we as teachers collectively want to change the world and bring great music to the world. We still have a lot of people to reach to.
Yeah,
and so absolutely. We need to be generous to get more people to appreciate the art that we love so much.
Mm. Yeah, that's brilliant. All right, so last couple of questions, Hugh. Let's say you're a teacher listening to this. We kind of mentioned it before, and you've just bought an iPad to use in your lessons, but you're kind of like, I don't know where to go. What should they do, and what would be your first like 3 or 5 apps to get?
The first thing I would do is to get my book.
Yeah.
I know it sounds cheesy.
No,
I know it sounds cheesy, but you know, it is designed exactly to answer that question. I've met so many teachers who are so intimidated by iPads, technology. This book answers those questions, but not only answers them, it opens your eyes to what's possible. Because in reality, teaching with technology changes your world. You start to realize you can do so much more for your students than you could ever have done with just a piano and pencil and paper. Mm. So one example, of course, is Fourscore. That's probably the number one app I would get. Mm-hmm. Another app I would get would be something called Music Notes. MusicNotes.com has a phenomenal sheet music reader that's free, but of course you buy their sheet music. But if you're teaching popular piano at in any level, you know, you really should get the Sheet Music Viewer app. It's actually one of the most advanced apps for a lot of different features for not only annotating, but also and other things as well.
Mm, okay.
But I would get that app. Here's another app that I wanted to show you. This is one of my secret weapon apps. This is an app called Coach's Eye. I don't know if you can see this. Oops. It's up. Well, let me try to see if I can get this back here. hello. Maybe you can. All right. It's. I just opened it up again. Let's see. Hold on. Come on. Get away.
Angles or something.
Yeah. It's trying to tell me to buy something right now. Here we go. All right.
Okay.
You can edit that out. Anyway, so Coach's Eye was developed for sports people. And if you've ever seen sports TV, you know, they'll show you play-by-play. Well, you can do that with musicians, too. So I'm going to zoom into this, and this is a flute player, but I can scroll forward and stop in time. I don't know if you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I can also do is I can do really cool things. I can, like, annotate. Watch this. So I can say, hey, watch where his lips are and watch how he's moving here. And just do posture things. And watch where you're moving your head, your fingers. And so I can do a play-by-play analysis of a student's posture. And it's kind of hard to see on the screen, but I've used this in lessons where I've seen students with bad posture, they're crouching or their arms. I do a Coach's Eye session with them. I draw the arrows, I show their back and their spine. I show it to them, they watch it, fixed instantly. That's the fastest fix for posture I can show. And you can share the videos and send them to them. So Coach's Eye, fantastic.
Cool.
It fixes things like that. And again, because when you have video and you're playing things back, the students, they respond to that far more than, sit up straight, Johnny. You can tell them, the cops come home. But when they see why their posture is affecting their playing, they fix it themselves. It's really quite remarkable.
I've got a student who I'm going to try that on next week. I'm going to get that. Coach's Eye. I like it.
Coach's Eye. Yes, yeah. A fantastic
great
app.
Tip. Thank you.
The other thing I would get would be an AirTurn.
Yep.
And now, an AirTurn is really probably more useful as a performance tool, but with an AirTurn, I can turn pages hands-free.
Forward.
See that?
And back.
Forward and backwards, right.
Yeah.
Now, why an AirTurn? Now, if your students are coming in with sheet music, what's really interesting is that the whole psychology of page turns, believe it or not, creates memory blocks. It slows down the speed at which you can learn things because you have the hesitation of the page. And with an air turn, you just that old-fashioned problem goes away. And I perform with an air turn all the time. But the air turn can also be used not just in reading sheet music, but also can be used to trigger the camera. So let's say you want to trigger the camera to record, you can set up the air turn to do that. Let's say you want, there's another app that you can get, several apps, where you can trigger a backing track. So let's say you want to have your student play with an orchestra. You can trigger it on, off, rewind, all hands free. So it's a very convenient tool, I highly recommend it. This is the air turn, actually this is the older version. This is a newer version, it's called the Duo. Mm-hmm. It's a professional grade version. And this one is the brand new PED. It's kind of a light version, but it's also cheaper, but really, really wonderful. So either the Duo or the PED. Duo is great for professional applications. The PED is just a great everyday pedal for budget-minded musicians, but they're both terrific options. So highly recommend that you invest in an air turn so that you understand what it means to not deal with your music the old-fashioned way.
I agree, and I'm a big fan of AirTurn. Yes, they are sponsors, and I'm quite open about that. But I only endorse products that I use and I am passionate about. And AirTurn have completely nailed that part of the market. It is a great product. So, yep, highly agree. Now, I was just going to last question too is, what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes teachers make when it comes to technology or starting to use technology?
I think the biggest mistake that most teachers do is trying to do too much. Mm-hmm. They try to learn about everything instead of mastering a few things at a time. That's one mistake. And then they just get frustrated and then they just never advance. Mm-hmm. The other problem I see is the opposite, where they'll try one thing and then they think that's it. And they're afraid to move on from that. So either they take too much at once or they take too little and never advance. Either one of those are situations where you have to understand, once you get on the technology treadmill, your mind is going to be blown and your thinking is going to be expanded. But then hopefully, if you understand it, you become more creative. You become more productive. And the last thing you want to do is stand still and be content with just a little bit. As you grow, your business will grow, your art will grow. Everything improves, but you have to be willing to go along for the ride, even if it's a little bit at a time. I think that's the biggest mistake. The teachers are too afraid. I've done seminars and workshops, and it's interesting. I've had many teachers come up to me kind of privately and say, you know what, I'm just afraid of learning anything new. You know, I'm so used to teaching the way I'm doing. I'm scared of learning this brand new thing, you know. And that's that for me. I think the teacher that is afraid to be a student, afraid to learn, that's the biggest mistake, whether it's in technology or art. So
I really like that. I encourage people that listen to what I do or read my blogs to, again, it's just small chunks. Just take one idea from a presentation, because at conferences, you know, they're fantastically exciting and engaging, and you get all these ideas, and you get home and you go, where do I start?
Yeah, exactly.
So you just have to do, you know, one thing, you know, download Fourscore, for example, and start loading music onto it and start reading from it. And then that's, you know, you've made a start. Start, you know, get one app that teaches rhythm and explore one app with one student and see how that goes.
But, you know, there's this fantastic podcast called Tim Topham. And But it's true. When you invest in yourself, in your self-education, your podcast is a tremendous resource for teachers. And that's another first step. Take a walk in the morning. Listen to Tim every morning. Learn what Tim is presenting by getting all these minds together, and you will be inspired, and you'll try one or two things. And if you're listening to Tim on a regular basis, you can't help but grow and get excited. And, you know, the technology will just come smoothly as a result. But follow Tim's podcast. I mean, this is a great resource. I can't recommend you highly enough.
Thanks very much, Hugh. I really appreciate it. And I didn't pay you to say that either.
It's great information. It's, I mean, again, the music community is such a small community, and the music tech community is even smaller. Mm. So I can't thank you enough for having me on your show. This has been so much fun to just share these ideas, and I deeply appreciate what you're doing. And one of these days, I want to have you on my website and interview you.
I'm there. Where in the States are you based?
I'm based in one of the suburbs of Philadelphia, on the East Coast.
Okay, all right. Now, next trip, I'll have to. I've got lots of people to visit now that I've met some people at the conference, so I have to try and organize it.
Oh, that would be so much fun. You're always welcome over. We'd love to have you over.
Thank you very much. Now, look, you're the absolute expert when it comes to this kind of video teaching method. Is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't?
I have an interesting article that I'll send to you, a link to. I break down the different kinds of internet teaching, mm-hmm. where you can learn passively through watching YouTube videos, the live interaction with Skype, mm-hmm. the downloadable book or ebook or library model, where you go on a site, you buy this, you can buy the videos and download or buy the book. And then the asynchronous model, which we've covered today, which is a different bag altogether. So mm-hmm. I just talk about the pros and cons of each of those things. So it might be a helpful summary.
Yeah.
So we'll send you the link to that article.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. All right. So you better tell people where they can find you online too.
Well, you can find me at HughSungPiano.com. Yeah.
Right.
That's actually, so if you go to HughSung.com, that's my entryway website. But HughSungPiano.com, you'll get to see my school in terms of how I present it, and it's an invitation for students there. And by the way, for folks who are interested, I'm giving a 10% discount code. So if you sign up for any of the memberships, just use the coupon code PIANO10 and you'll get a 10% discount.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for offering that. And is that on the artist works site?
Right. So from my HughSungPiano.com, you can sign up for the artist works site there. For me, it was a little easier to say HughSungPiano.com than artistworks.com/Hugh-Sung.
Mouthful. Let's stick with the first one. That's great. Thank you so much for offering that. That's brilliant. And I'll put a link to your the ebook on the AirTurn store, and also the 4 ways to learn music online, which was your article. And I think you've got another one about 3 reasons why video exchange lessons are better than live ones.
I do.
So I'll put a link to that one there too. And for everyone listening, the show notes and all these links will all be at timtopham.com/episode13. And finally, if you could leave a review, it would be really, really good. You can find out about that at timtopham.com/iTunes. There's some instructions there. It's dead easy, and it makes a huge difference, and I really value it. So, Hugh, thank you so much for your time tonight, where you are, this morning where I am. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Tim, thank you so much for having me on the show, and thank you for what you're doing for the world of music. It's such an important work, and I can't thank you enough for what you're doing.
Oh, cheers. I appreciate it. So goodbye, everyone. Until next time, I look forward to seeing you in episode 14. See you later.